The Castle Made for Love by Barbara Cartland and read by Sophie Roberts for Saga Egmont. Author's note: The castle made for love in this story is the Castle Douze, built on the edge of the dark, mysterious forest of Chinon in the Indre Valley. It inspired Perrault to write the tale The Sleeping Beauty. Built in the 16th and 17th centuries, it is the most beautiful fairy tale building I have ever seen. The Paris International Exhibition of 1867 was the apotheosis of the Second Empire. Held mainly for political reasons, it attracted visitors from all over the world, and the list of royal guests was endless. The whole of France became intoxicated with pleasure and pride, pride in its machinery and magnificent army, pleasure in its money and its beautiful capital. But 3 years later, the Prussians had defeated the French army at Sedan, the Emperor Louis Napoleon and the Empress Eugenie had fled into exile, the palace of the Tuileries was burnt down, and the siege of Paris began. Chapter 1, 1867. Mademoiselle la Comtesse Marie-Thérèse Madeleine de Beauharnais stood on the terrace and looked out over the green land that sloped towards the river Indre. "Mine, all mine," she said to herself. Then she turned round to lean against the stone balustrade and look up at the castle behind her. Built on a cliff where the forest of Chinon ended, the castle stood above flowered terraces. Its massive fortified towers and its turrets, dormer windows and chimneys were silhouetted against the green background, and with the whole structure picked out in white stone, it appeared to have stepped straight out of a fairy tale. Looking at it now, she expected to see knights in armour with their pennants, flags and fine horses riding out to fight with their lances against the dragons that lurked in the forests or the evil which attacked good. She remembered that when she was a child, her father told her stories of such knights and how the castle they lived in was redolent with the history of France. To think of her father made her expect to see him come through one of the arched doorways and call out to her, as he invariably did when he returned home, "Yola! Yola!" No one else called her by that special name. Her father had wished her to be christened Yolande, which was the name of one of their most illustrious ancestors, but her mother predictably had insisted that every name she bore must be that of a saint, so she was called Marie-Thérèse. "Yola! Yola!" She could hear his voice now, echoing up to the Beauharnais flag that flew above the innumerable roofs, and which could be seen for miles round by those who served them or lived on the estate. But now her father was dead, and because there was no son, Yola had inherited the castle. For a moment, her pride of possession left her, and she felt very small and lonely as she thought how much responsibility rested upon her shoulders. How could she manage without her father? How would anything seem the same without his laughter, without the talks they enjoyed together, and the times they had ridden over the estate, glorying in the beauty of the Loire Valley? It was her father who had told her how privileged they were to live in what was called the Garden of France. It was not only the beauty of it and its mild, soft atmosphere, but the magic that made all who lived there different from the inhabitants of any other part of France. Yola had grown up not only with the tales of knightly valour, but also with the legends of Joan of Arc. She had made her father tell her over and over again how Joan had appeared and visited the Dauphin at the castle of Chinon. While waiting to be received by him, she had spent 2 days fasting and praying at an inn not far from the town. Although her mystical voices had told her that the Dauphin must throw out the hated English conquerors, the courtiers had laughed at the idea that a peasant girl could be anything but an impostor. When finally she was admitted to the palace, the great hall was lit with 50 torches and 300 gentlemen in rich apparel were assembled there. To test her, the Dauphin hid amongst the crowd, and a courtier wore his robes. Joan had then advanced shyly.